The History of Tom Jones by Henry Fielding. In that part of the western division of this kingdom which is commonly called Somersetshire, there lately lived, and perhaps lives still, a gentleman whose name was Allworthy, and who might well be called the favourite of both nature and fortune. From the former of these he derived an agreeable person, a sound constitution, a solid understanding, and a benevolent heart. By the latter he was decreed to the inheritance of one of the largest estates in the county. This gentleman had in his youth married a very worthy and beautiful woman, of whom he had been extremely fond. By her he had three children, all of whom died in their infancy. He had likewise had the misfortune of burying this beloved wife herself about 5 years before the time in which this history chooses to set out. He now lived, for the most part, retired in the country, with one sister, Bridget, for whom he had a very tender affection. As our story begins, Mr. Allworthy had been absent a full quarter of a year in London on some very particular business. He came to his house very late in the evening, and after a short supper with his sister, retired, much fatigued, to his chamber. Here he was preparing to step into bed, when upon opening the clothes, to his great surprise, he beheld an infant, wrapped up in some coarse linen, in a sweet and profound sleep, between his sheets. He stood some time lost in astonishment at this sight. But as good nature had always the ascendant in his mind, he soon began to be touched with sentiments of compassion for the little wretch before him. He then rang his bell, and ordered an elderly woman servant to rise immediately and come to him. On her arrival, he gave Mrs. Deborah Wilkins orders to take the child to her own bed, and to call up a maidservant to provide it pap and other things against it waked. He likewise ordered that proper clothes should be procured for it early in the morning, and that it should be brought to himself as soon as he was stirring. The usual compliments having passed between Mr. Allworthy and Miss Bridget at breakfast, and the tea being poured out, he summoned Mrs. Wilkins, and told his sister he had a present for her, and Mrs. Wilkins, according to the order she had received from her master, produced the little infant. Great surprises, as hath been observed, are apt to be silent. And so was Miss Bridget, till her brother began and told her the whole story. Miss Bridget had always expressed so great a regard for what the ladies are pleased to call virtue, and had herself maintained such a severity of character, that it was expected, especially by Wilkins, that she would have vented much bitterness on this occasion, and would have voted for sending the child, as a kind of noxious animal, immediately out of the house. But on the contrary, she rather took the good-natured side of the question, intimated some compassion for the helpless little creature, and commended her brother's charity in what he had done. Perhaps the reader may account for this behaviour from her condescension to Mr. Allworthy, when we have informed him that the good man had ended his narrative with owning a resolution to take care of the child, and to breed him up as his own. For, to acknowledge the truth, she was always ready to oblige her brother, and very seldom, if ever, contradicted his sentiments. However, what she withheld from the infant, she bestowed with the utmost profuseness on the poor unknown mother, whom she called an impudent slut, a wanton hussy, an audacious harlot, a wicked jade, a vile strumpet, with every other appellation with which the tongue of virtue never fails to lash those who bring a disgrace on the sex. A consultation was now entered into how to proceed in order to discover the mother. A scrutiny was first made into the characters of the female servants of the house, who were all acquitted by Mrs. Wilkins. The next step was to examine among the inhabitants of the parish, and this was referred to Mrs. Wilkins, who was to inquire with all imaginable diligence and to make her report in the afternoon. She went immediately to the habitation of an elderly matron to whom, as this matron had the good fortune to resemble herself in the comeliness of her person as well as in her age, she had generally been more favourable than to any of the rest. To this woman she imparted what had happened, and the design upon which she was come thither that morning. These two began presently to scrutinise the characters of the several young girls who lived in any of those houses, and at last fixed their strongest suspicion on one Jenny Jones, who they both agreed was the likeliest person to have committed this fact. Jenny had lately been often at Mr. Allworthy's house. She had officiated as nurse to Miss Bridget in a violent fit of illness, and had sat up many nights with that lady, besides which she had been seen there the very day before Mr. Allworthy's return by Mrs. Wilkins herself. Though Mrs. Deborah was fully satisfied of the guilt of Jenny, it is possible Mr. Allworthy might have required some stronger evidence to have convicted her. But she saved her accusers any such trouble by freely confessing the whole fact with which she was charged. Mrs. Deborah, having succeeded beyond her hopes in her inquiry, returned with much triumph, and at the appointed hour made a faithful report to Mr. Allworthy, who dispatched the prudent housekeeper again to bring the unhappy culprit before him. When Jenny appeared, Mr. Allworthy took her into his study and spoke to her as follows. "I talk to you, child, not to insult you for what is past and irrevocable, but to caution and strengthen you for the future. Nor should I have taken this trouble, but from some opinion of your good sense, notwithstanding the dreadful slip you have made, and from some hopes of your hearty repentance, which are founded on the openness and sincerity of your confession. If these do not deceive me, I will take care to convey you from this scene of your shame, where you shall, by being unknown, avoid the punishment which is allotted to your crime in this world. And I hope, by repentance, you will avoid the much heavier sentence denounced against it in the other. Be a good girl the rest of your days, and want shall be no motive to your going astray. As to your child, let no thoughts concerning it molest you. I will provide for it in a better manner than you can ever hope. And now nothing remains but that you inform me who was the wicked man that seduced you, for my anger against him will be much greater than you have experienced on this occasion." Jenny now first lifted her eyes from the ground, and with a modest look and decent voice said, "Sir, I must on my knees entreat you not to persist in asking me to declare the father of my infant. I promise you faithfully you shall one day know, but I am under the most solemn ties and engagements of honour, as well as the most religious vows and protestations, to conceal his name at this time. And I know you too well to think you would desire I should sacrifice either my honour or my religion." The ingenuity of this behaviour had gained Jenny so much credit with this worthy man that he easily believed what she told him. He therefore dismissed her with assurances that he would very soon remove her out of the reach of that obloquy she had incurred. Neither Mr. Allworthy's house nor his heart was shut against any part of mankind, but they were both more particularly open to men of merit. Among others of this kind was Dr. Blifil, a master of almost every science, but that by which he was to get his bread, the consequence of which was that the doctor at the age of 40 had no bread to eat. Such a person as this was certain to find a welcome at Mr. Allworthy's table, to whom misfortunes were ever a recommendation when they were derived from the folly or villainy of others, and not of the unfortunate person himself. Besides this negative merit, the doctor had one positive recommendation. This was a great appearance of religion. Whether his religion was real, or consisted only in appearance, I shall not presume to say. If this part of his character pleased Mr. Allworthy, it delighted Miss Bridget. And as sympathies of all kinds are apt to beget love, so experience teaches us that none have a more direct tendency this way than those of a religious kind between persons of different sexes. The doctor found himself so agreeable to Miss Bridget that he now began to lament an unfortunate accident which had happened to him about 10 years before, namely, his marriage with another woman, who was not only still alive, but what was worse, known to be so by Mr. Allworthy. He had not long ruminated on this before it occurred to his memory that he had a brother who was under no such unhappy incapacity. This brother, he made no doubt, would succeed, for he discerned, as he thought, an inclination to marriage in the lady. This gentleman was about 35 years of age. He had purchased the post of lieutenant of dragoons, and afterwards came to be a captain, but having quarrelled with his colonel, was, by his interest, obliged to sell, from which time he had entirely rusticated himself, had betaken himself to studying the scriptures, and was not a little suspected of an inclination to Methodism. The doctor sent for his brother, and easily found means to introduce him at Allworthy's as a person who intended only a short visit to himself. The captain had not been in the house a week before the doctor had reason to felicitate himself on his discernment. The captain was indeed as great a master of the art of love as Ovid was formerly. Not to tire the reader by leading him through every scene of this courtship, the captain made his advances in form. The citadel was defended in form, and at length, in proper form, surrendered at discretion. 8 months after the celebration of the nuptials between Captain Blifil and Miss Bridget Allworthy, was Miss Bridget, by reason of a fright, delivered of a fine boy. The child was indeed, to all appearance, perfect, but the midwife discovered it was born a month before its full time. Though the birth of an heir of his beloved sister was a circumstance of great joy to Mr. Allworthy, yet it did not alienate his affections from the little foundling to whom he had been godfather, had given his own name of Thomas, and whom he had hitherto seldom failed of visiting at least once a day in his nursery. This a good deal soured the captain's temper, as did all the other daily instances of Mr. Allworthy's generosity, for he looked on all such largesses to be diminutions of his own wealth. His meditations were entirely employed on Mr. Allworthy's fortune, for first, he exercised much thought in calculating as well as he could the exact value of the whole, which calculations he often saw occasion to alter in his own favour, and secondly, and chiefly, he pleased himself with intended alterations in the house and gardens, and in projecting many other schemes, as well for the improvement of the estate as of the grandeur of the place. Nothing was wanting to enable him to enter upon the immediate execution of these but the death of Mr. Allworthy, in calculating which he had employed much of his own algebra, besides purchasing every book extant that treats of the value of lives, reversions, etc. From all which he satisfied himself that, as he had every day a chance of this happening, so had he more than an even chance of its happening within a few years. But while the captain was one day busied in deep contemplations of this kind, one of the most unlucky, as well as unseasonable, accidents happened to him. Just at the very instant when his heart was exulting in meditations on the happiness which would accrue to him by Mr. Allworthy's death, he himself died of an apoplexy.